Hey everyone, this is What the Heck with Richard Dweck, season four. I think this is episode three of the podcast, the season. Aaron Duvall is on this. He is a comic that is originally from Florida. He came down a few months ago and he's, you know, been doing really well. He's a very, very good, polished comedian, given his, you know, short time doing stand-up, and he's great. And we get into everything, you know. He's really into roast, style jokes, and we get into that. We get into, you know, roasting, and he also has a podcast of his own called, his podcast is called You Laughing at Me. He's done a few episodes of that, and what his thing was that with his podcast was they take comedians who are off right off of stage and, you know, ask them, you know, if they want to do podcasts, and they interview them for 10 minutes. And he did that for a while. And there's a couple of episodes up on Podbean. And, you know, Aaron Duvall is on, his stuff is on, you know, he's on all the social media and stuff. We talked about how important that is and how he learned about that. And, he's also, I forgot the name that he gave, he mentioned it, but he's also has a Twitch account that he's, you know, starting to do. So, thank you. So, thank you for listening. Hey, Aaron.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Great.
Welcome to, What the Heck with Richard Dweck.
Thanks, man, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. This is, Season 4, Episode 3. This is Aaron Duvall. When did you come to New Jersey?
I got here at the end of July. It was July 26th or 27th I moved here.
Right. I just remember you made such a great impression, like, when you first came to our open mic in, at the Brighton Bar. And you've just been, like, great to watch.
I appreciate that, man. I really do. Thank you.
When did you start doing stand-up?
Let's see. I'm all going towards my 3 year, so it would be 2017. 2018. I took a comedy class. A friend of mine did a comedy class. I took his class in Orlando, Florida at the Orlando Improv. So that would have been May the 14th.
What was that like? Was it helpful?
It was very helpful. I hear a lot of comics, they get down on you for taking classes. For me, what it did was it allowed me to learn how to do joke structure, timing, some etiquette.
Right.
There's things I see new comics do that haven't had a class that, you know, I can pick out the ones that take in some kind of class or have some kind of experience versus others that don't. So it was very helpful.
My only opinion on it is I think classes are fine because I know a lot of comedians, a lot of professional comedians who've done classes starting out. Jim Gaffigan took like a class and stuff. And it's like, to me, I don't mind if you take classes. People who take like multiple classes is to me that kind of annoy me. Because to me, the fun thing about stand-up is sort of, I guess, the DIY nature of it. And sort of I like everyone having their own journey that they sort of learn how to do stand up on their own. Like, that's the cool thing to me is, you know, starting out how terrible I was and getting to the place I am now. It just feels, I don't know. I can be kind of snobbish about it if people take like certain classes, but I have no problem with people who take one class because, like, of course you got to take, it's natural to take class, like to learn something new that you've never done before.
What?
And plus, plus, they can give you a lot of good tips.
Yes. Here's the thing. I think of it like this. You know, if you want to pursue this as a career, every other career has a class.
Right.
Whether it's a doctor, an IT technician, even a bartender. They all have classes to teach you how to. Why can't you take a class for comedy?
Right.
I actually did take more than one class. I took one with my friend Carmen. Vallone out of Orlando, and then another one I took a class with Devin Siebold out of Orlando, Florida, and they're both.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
Devin. Devin's a he calls himself the teacher's comic because he's a teacher as well, so he does a lot of comedy based around teaching. His class was a little bit different. Carmen taught me the basics of getting up on stage, doing your jokes, timing. Devin taught us more along the lines of how to do social media, how to do business, basically be a businessman in comedy. So there were two different, totally different classes, and they taught me two totally different things, and it was very helpful.
That actually sounds really helpful, because that's the hardest thing to me. I always think, you know, the business side of comedy is very hard, and I think it's very different from a lot of other, like, performers with, like, rock stars and, like, actors. I think we have such a different, just social atmosphere that, like, comedians aren't really that great of, like, professional people. Like, you've been around other comics.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I don't know. I think it could go either way. I've seen comics who they're good at promoting themselves. They push. They have the hustle. You know, yeah. they have that hustle. And then other comics who just keep doing open mics, mic after mic after mic, who don't do anything else, who don't try to get on bigger shows.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's always been a thing for me, is just trying to get out there. And speaking of which, you've been able to get on a couple of shows recently. I know it's so hard with COVID. Have you done any of the, like, Zoom shows or anything like that?
No. For me, I'm not a big fan of a Zoom show. And I think that's because the main element every comic needs is to have that laughter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The only way there's only two ways I'd probably do a Zoom show. One would be if the mics were turned on so I can hear the laughter from the audience that are actually watching, which right. I've seen a professional comic do. Or right. Some comics are now dipping into VR, virtual reality. So you can go into a VR right. comedy club, and it looks like you're standing on stage telling your jokes, and you can actually see people there, and you can hear their laughter as well.
Right. I mean, that's the main thing for me, too, is I have this joke about it. I've not done it on stage, but I think it really fits. It's a lot like what I imagine being a stripper is like, because, like, when they get money thrown at them for a certain move they do, they're like, okay, I'll keep that in my, you know, routine. For us, it's like, you know, depending on the amount of laughs we get for a joke or any, like, reaction, you're going to keep that in your set.
Right.
So if I have no thing to bounce off of, it's just like, to me, it's just like, I could just go on Instagram Live if I want to do this.
Right.
So it's you kind of have the same view as me. It's like, if I could actually hear, if there could actually be laughter and, like, a reaction, then I would definitely do it. But I'm just happy, like, with the Brighton Bar and everything. They're doing a couple shows, and I'm just glad that that's coming back.
Yeah.
So when you created, like, your whole act, how did that end up? Did that just come, like, out of the class? Like, how long did it take you to get that whole, your, like, general routine?
So I know there's comics out there that say, oh, you know, you should do your routine for a couple of months and retire, do something new. I've actually been doing the same set since I started comedy 2.5 years ago. If you go back and, you know, watch any of the videos I've recorded, you'll notice that the jokes are pretty similar. They're still the same premise. They've changed. They're not exactly right. the same. And that's how, to me, I think jokes should be done. You know, you start a joke, it's never finished. You're always right, adding, exactly. changing, trying to make it bigger. You've heard my Monopoly joke. That actually started as like a 30-second joke, and now it's 2.5 minutes long. So,
yeah, I love doing that with material. Like, that's one of the coolest things to me is I did a lot of creative writing when I was younger, and the one thing that was always, you know, annoyed my teachers and everything was I would start a I would always start new projects all the time. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to write this book for a year. And then 2 weeks later, I'm like, I have another idea for a book. And with stand-up, it's better for that because it's like you can just keep writing jokes and also you can go back to stuff.
Yeah.
And start working on stuff. So it's always been good for that. I just like a lot of your style of it feels very old school in a good way. If you know what I mean. Like, very traditional. Like, you do a lot of jokes that, like, you're a heavier guy like me, and I like that you are able to do those jokes, and they don't feel, like, generic, if you know what I mean. They seem very, like, this is just me complimenting you. They seem very just creative and really well written.
I mean, I try to talk about the real struggles. I mean, there's one joke I talk about, you know, looking like a middle-aged, angry lesbian or being mistaken as a woman. That's something that actually happened to me quite a bit when I was younger. I was mistaken as a woman a lot. I looked young. I had the man boobs going on. I had like a baby face. So I could kind of either pass for a man or a woman, or as some people would say, I don't know if you ever saw the skit from Saturday Night Live, Pat. That's why I started growing out the facial hair. It's the only thing that really helps me. And even still, once in a great, great while, somebody will call me a ma'am from behind. Excuse me, ma'am, can I help you?
Yeah. So, who were sort of your, like, influences in comedy? Do you have, like, favorite comedian or, like, a couple comedians that you sort of, that you not only like, but that sort of, like, guided you into wanting to do that?
I would say the actual influences were the Orlando comics that, you know, taught me. If I were to say favorite comedians that I admired and said I could do that, George Carlin.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Pryor. A lot of the old school comedians. Eddie Murphy was the first VH tape that I watched as a kid, to kind of date how old I am. Those are some of my favorites from back in the day. And my favorites, like current favorites, have kind of changed over time. You know, just depending on who's hot and who's not.
Right. Yeah. Did you do any type of performing when you were like in high school or younger?
No, I didn't. Actually, I was scared to get on a stage. That's one of the reasons I got into comedy. I wanted to conquer that stage fright thing.
I gotta say, it seems like you have done really well with that. Like, you seem very comfortable on stage, and I know that's like, it always looks that way.
I fake it really well.
Like, you never know what someone's really struggling with on the inside. Because for me, when I started like performing, it was like in 2008 with singing, and then I did improv, and it's like, it's such a different animal doing stand-up, because it's just like, it's so raw, and so like having to do it yourself, and I love it so much, but it is very like interesting. Like, it just seems like your demeanor that like you seem pretty comfortable with speaking, but I figure you probably do that with your like day job. You do engineering, right?
No, right now I do data entry for a pool company. My field is IT, tech support and networking and stuff. But, you know, COVID times have kind of made it hard for me. Right. So I'm just taking what I can get until I can get myself back on my feet.
Right. Yeah. And you do Uber,
yeah,
too,
I do
right?
that on the side, you know, when it's slow. Like right now, that's pretty much my paycheck is Uber, because the pool company I work for is like, we're up north, it's winter, pools are frozen or cold, not a whole lot going on, so they don't have any work to give me.
Right. Do people know, like, that you do a lot of people know that you do stand-up, or do you keep it?
Friends and family, a lot of friends and family do. Anybody who's on my Facebook, I'm always talking about it on Facebook, so.
Right. Is your family supportive?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, that's good.
My brother and his sister-in-law and family have seen me at the Improv in Orlando when they came for a vacation. My mom and dad still haven't seen me yet. It's kind of made it hard with it. Moving here during COVID and, you know, nothing right. going on that's they could really go to. Plus, they're older. They don't really want to be out around that crowd.
Right.
So they're high risk.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So you like everything? You like the scene in New Jersey? You like
The comic scene? It's kind of hard for me to judge. I mean, right now it seems like it's all right. There's not a whole lot going on. It seems like I don't know if this is the normal for the comedy scene or not. I won't be able to tell until COVID's over. I would imagine there's probably more going on once COVID is not, you know, restricting everybody. Yeah. So that's what I'm waiting to see what happens when COVID clears up. Eventually, I want to, you know, get further north and start doing some northern mics and into New York and then also west into Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. I heard Philadelphia has great, like, just great places to be. That's the thing that, like, is kind of, you know, it's the thing with COVID. It's like, I haven't been able to do any other stuff. So, like, I have a couple of shows, but they're all at Brain Barn. It's just, like, I like it there, but I really miss just going out. And I think that was the hardest part for COVID was just, like, I was just on a roll of, like, going to all these mics and stuff, and then it just completely
went away. Yeah, I understand.
So, growing up with those comedians that you mentioned, was your family really into comedy, or was it like a hobby that you just sort of...
Actually, yeah. I mean, my mom used to love watching Carlin and Gallagher and all those older comic, Robin Williams. She was into it. Yeah. My dad was too. They loved comedy shows and like comedy, like sitcoms and stuff like that as well. And my dad, I never knew this until like within the last year, he told me he actually did a stand-up class himself when he was in college, which I was like, flabbergasted. I'd never heard him tell me that story. I said, why did you never tell me this?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what he told me he did. It didn't really go much for anywhere for him, but he did it for a bit.
Yeah. That's always so cool to have that sort of thing with, you know, just your family being supported is always a big important thing. So have you had any, I don't want to like put you on the spot or anything, but with doing Uber and stuff, have you gotten like any more, does it that give you a lot of material to work with? Like do you usually take from what people like in experiences there, or do you sort of keep it?
My Uber, like, I don't separate? Really do any Uber jokes. There's a reason for that. There are a lot of Uber jokes as riders already. Tons of people doing it, so it seems like it's kind of beaten to death. There's Uber jokes as drivers as well. There's a comic named Eric Myers who's very funny. He has probably the best Uber joke I've ever seen. Look him up on YouTube, and you will laugh your ass off when you see that joke. That's probably one of my favorite jokes that he does, and I've this ever listened to. I just love that joke.
I love his like his whole presentation. He just seems like such an interesting guy.
He's a very interesting person. I've met him in person a couple times, and my God, he's so funny.
Have you been able to go to any like shows recently of like professional comics or anything?
No, I mean, there's been a couple that have happened in Philadelphia. They're, you know, outside, and no, I haven't. I haven't even been doing a whole lot of open mics recently. I've been spending most of my time trying to Uber just to make sure I have enough money to pay my bills, so I'm kind of neglecting the open mics, but I'm getting that itch to get back out and start doing them again, so I might start hitting up at least one a week.
Yeah, when you told me that you did that you how you were working, I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, I haven't quit. It's just bills are more important to me right now.
Yeah, that's always the thing of like, you know, because it takes a lot of time. Like, people don't realize that, like, to also wait around and be there on time and stuff.
There's a lot of time involved with doing an open mic. And, I mean, the open mic can last an hour, two and a half hours, and there's no telling when you're going to get up. It all depends on, you know, the host, when, how they're handling that. And if you're one of the last ones to get up, you're sitting there for an hour and a half, 2 hours before you get up. You're only doing 5 minutes. And for me, it's an hour drive to Brighton Bar, an hour drive back, so that's another 2 more hours.
Right. So I know you talked about this joke when you were on Eric's podcast, but it is so great, the Monopoly
one.
Has that how did that, like, did that just start in that class?
So my friend Carmen, who did the class, also will host the Wednesday night open mic at the Orlando Improv. And before that, before the improv, he did a writing group. Anybody who wanted to come out can do it. Just bring a notebook. And what he did is he gave us all random topics. He said, okay, you got 30 minutes. Try to come up with something with 30 minutes. He gave me board games. And the best thing I could come up with was Monopoly. And I'm trying to think, I think at the time the joke went a whole totally different way than what it does now. It doesn't even, it's not even the exact same joke. It's just the same subject, really.
Right.
And over time it evolved.
Yeah, it's really cool how that happens. Like, I love when that, how that happens with jokes. Like, I always am, the one thing that was so interesting to me when I started, like, when I was going through it, it's like, you know, when you record your set, you're like, you think a joke is longer than it is, and then some jokes are like shorter. You're like, oh, this joke only takes 5 minutes. It feels like, you know, it takes longer. So it's interesting to see like how stuff goes through. I know you've only been doing it a little longer. I talked about this a little bit. Do you have any like actual like shows that you've done that have stood out as like, you know, any type of like kind of horror stories, like bad shows? Do you have any like things like that that have ever really happened?
I wouldn't say horror shows, but bombed. I definitely bombed. A friend of mine in Orlando, it was his birthday, and he decided that he wanted to do a roast. So, you know, he got to buy a bunch of his friends together. He's an African-American guy, so a lot of his friends, African-American.
Right.
And the roast took about an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then afterwards, he wanted me to do my set. And I was fairly new as a comic to start with.
Right.
And I'm up there just telling my stuff and it's noisy. People are walking around talking, and there was like maybe one or two people laughing, paying attention, but it felt like a bomb to me. And I just pushed through it. Usually when I find that I'm bombing, I kind of get the I don't give a shit feeling, and then I shorten my jokes, or I don't put as much emphasis into it, and just to push through, and I'll cut it early too.
Because when that hits, you just like, when that sort of hits, like, it, you want to get off stage as soon as possible. Because you're like, you get that sinking feeling. You're like, yeah, this is not, like, it's always like here at the moment. But I haven't seen that yet. I haven't seen you run. You do really, really well. And are you very, like, you seem to be, but maybe I'm just guessing this. Are you, like, articulate with your set, like, or is it just like more of a flow type of though, the flow type of thing.
A little bit of both, actually. And I'm articulate in the point that I will, when I write a joke out, I will try to find the best wording for the joke that I think is going to be funny. I've spent hours on one joke, moving wording around. Just sometimes it's just one word will make the joke work or fail. And I've tried to find ways to reword jokes to make them work. And then when I'm on stage, I kind of have a flow. I might deviate from the flow a little bit. Who knows? I may even change the word out that I originally had in there.
Right.
So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. I think the hardest part now is just like, with the way my, I don't know if you probably can relate to this, is like, you always wish there would be more time now. I think that's what happens when, like, you've been doing stand-up for a little while, is you always just want that more time. Is like, you know, find more places to, you know, and that's what's great about, you know, getting on shows and stuff. You had a show a little while ago, or did that get canceled?
That got canceled. That was in Pennsylvania. It was actually the night before Thanksgiving, and the governor over there kind of put restrictions on the bars and restaurants, so they had to cancel it.
Did you have any other like shows before that, or have you not had?
The only other show I had here in New Jersey was the one that Donna Lloyd did. That was the only one that I actually was able to like get scheduled land. Other than that, it was just open mics.
That was
I had a good time at that show.
I mean, that was, and we did a little bit of the
roast afterwards, right?
We roasted each other a little bit. That was such like a. I was not expecting to be involved in that.
It was a little weird.
Just like, I had nothing. I was like, I felt so bad. I was like, you know, because Ziggy, he loves doing the roasting stuff. He's involved big in that scene. I was sort of surprised that that's kind of a like new market now. Like they have people that just like writing groups and like certain like shows and stuff for people that just do like roasting and stuff. And it's so. Are you into? Do you like?
I actually kind of do. I know a lot of people call it trash comedy or it's garbage and stuff, but I like it. I like watching them, and then if I can get into one, I'll do one. I've actually did two in Orlando or in Central Florida, actually, and I won both of those.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'm on a show tonight, and it's so, like, funny because the only problem that I have with it is I'm going up against Scott Holt. He was on the Donna show. And the thing that always, like, the only thing I don't like is when I don't know the person that well. Because to me, it's always more fun when you know, like, someone. Like, me and Dan, we have such this great, like, relationship. So, like, we can go after each other, but it can be really hard. Do you find that, too, with roast battles, or are you good at, like, or are you comfortable with... You know,
it's when you're roasting somebody, you got to do your research on that person, try to get as much information as you can. You know, ironically, when you're doing a roast, the unsaid rule, or maybe just said, is to roast somebody that you love. Don't roast somebody you hate. It's somebody that you love, somebody you're friends with. And they will usually give you information. And when I did one of the roasts in Orlando, my friend George, you know, we called each other on the phone and, you know, we exchanged information like, here, you know, you could talk about this and vice versa. And it worked out well for both of us. It was a good show. You know, we had the crowds just laughing so hard. It was such a good show.
Right. That's actually a good idea. I never really thought of that. That's actually a really good idea, because for me, it was just like, it was so hard for me. And now I have an angle with what I'm going to do, but it was just like, you know, because you can only look up so much about someone and see like their general vibe.
I have some general roasts too. If I can't get a lot of information, I have like an all around type roast that you can use on people.
Yeah. I just think it's like, to me, it's like I have such like a target. Like I have so much things to make fun of. It's just interesting to me to be able to like, okay, I can have this thing to do. And it's also cool just to be around like actual, like the judges and stuff are really cool. Like the last one I did, I went up against Carl and I felt really bad for him because like he didn't really write, like he didn't know, like he didn't write a whole lot of jokes and I wrote basically jokes.
I remember that.
It was like a really like weird thing. If it was just our regular, like if it was our regular venue of like people, he would have done fine. But since it was this whole other group of people, it was just so tough. And with them, it's just like tonight, I'm so excited about is just who the judges are going to be, if they're going to be the same people. And it's just as always, you know, a thing to learn. And I think that's the cool thing about doing stand-up or anything. It's just learning it and getting better at it.
Roasting is a different type of comedy. I mean, you're not telling jokes about your experience. You're telling jokes essentially to make fun of the other person. And there's a different, you know, that there's different structure to it and things you should do. And if you're a comic, like maybe Carl didn't know how to do roast jokes before. If you don't know how to do that, then, you know, it's going to show. Or if you don't prepare, a lot of people think you just go up there and talk shit about somebody based on how they look and what you know. But as a roasting comic, you want to do your research, find out who you're going against, do some research. And, you know, even if you have to write it down, take it on paper. I don't know if you've ever seen the comedy roast on Comedy Central. What's his name? Carr. I can't remember. He's an English guy. He goes out there with the clipboard. Yeah, Jimmy Carr. He goes out there with the clipboard and everything written down. He's a professional, but he has it written down. Yeah. And he reads off, you know, a piece of paper.
Yep. Yeah, I had a roast of myself last year, which was so fun. The only hard part was like organizing it and getting people on it. Because the big thing for me was like, I wanted people on it who knew me. So it was really hard. Like, I actually felt really bad that I had to like not have some people on because I just didn't know them that well. And I was like, you know, they're not going to have that much material. But we're doing another one, Dan's doing it because he missed it, so he's putting it on, and it just is gonna be like interesting to see how that goes, because I'll be able to get more people. And the one thing that I dislike about, you know, the roasts nowadays on television is they're not really, they used to be like comedians that knew each other, and it's always better when you know people, but now they just have like celebrities. And a lot of comedians have to have, like, that write on that show are really, really good. Like, they're really, you know, Tony Hinchcliffe? Yeah, he writes on that, and it's, like, his story of how he had, they had Ann Coulter on one of the last ones. And she wouldn't, like, play ball with anything that he wrote. And he wrote all this, like, great stuff for her. And he's like, you know, he was like, if she just, like, and that must be like so frustrating. And to me, like the last like great one that I saw was the James Franco one, because it was just like Jonah Hill and all these guys that are like friends with each other, and you can sort of tell the difference. Like, I think in any type of like sense, professional or like even like, you know, if you just see one locally, like you can tell sort of the atmosphere of who knows each other. And
right, yeah. Keep in mind too, those guys, some of them might be writing their own jokes, but there's also joke writers behind the scenes writing the jokes for them.
Yeah.
So that makes it a little easier for them.
Yeah. I didn't expect to talk about this. I forgot that you were in.
Oh, yeah. I enjoy it. Like I said, some comics see this trash. I think it's fun.
You know, I think that's always, I think, you know, I can be guilty of, you know, thinking certain things are not. To me, it's always good to get the perspective of what people like to do. And different ways to do comedy.
Yeah, I mean, there's roasting, there's stand-up, there's improv, there's TV, stage performance. You know, there's all kinds of different ways to do comedy.
Right. Have you done any type of – have you done any improv before?
No. I thought about getting into it. I don't know if I'd be as good at it as I am with stand-up. But who knows? Yeah. I may try something someday in the future.
Right. I did it. That's what I started out in, because like, my thing was, I'm going to do improv for like 2 weeks and then – or like a month, and then I'll do stand-up. And I ended up doing it for many years. And to me, what was good about it was just being surrounded by a good group of people, because – even though I can't do a lot of like voices or characters or anything, just being able to bounce off like the best people is sort of really cool. And that's always like the great experience. I always love that. But I just was always mad that I could never come up with characters. Like, I'm really envious of like sketch actors and stuff, because I just don't know how people do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's some characters I've heard that, like, some comics have been out there like doing it for years and years and years. They're just not doing well, and they come up with the character, and all of a sudden that character just blows them up, and they become famous. You know, that happens. If you find a character, try to make a character, try to make up something of your own if you want to do that, and keep plugging away at it. Same thing as a joke as a comic. You know, you do a joke, if it bombs, it doesn't mean it's a bad joke. This means it needs to be restructured or something.
This means you have
try it a different way. Keep going at it.
Yeah. So, I don't really ask. I was curious.
I'm divorced. It's probably been about six, 7 years now since I've been divorced.
Right. Has that been hard with? Was that, like, easier for you to get into comedy with not having something, or was that sort of an impetus to, like, sort of push you? Did that have any part in you doing
that? I would say yes, in a way. You know, when you're married, you have other commitments and things you got to do, but as a single person, I don't have anybody to answer to, so I go do whatever I want,
right,
whether they like it or not. And now... Right. If I date somebody, I tell them up front that I'm a comic, and they're usually supportive of it and want to come to a show. And
right.
So it's you know, being single definitely made it easier for me.
Yeah.
Not having kids either, so there's no commitment there for that.
Right. I know you mentioned in your joke that you can't have kids.
That's
did
actually
you ever want kids?
That, keep in mind, that's a joke. I don't know. I could probably have kids, but I just, that's just a joke. Did I ever want kids?
Oh, okay. I figured that's so funny to me. I figured that was just like something that was real. That's always so funny that you never know what like is a joke
right.
in someone's act or what is like actually true. Because it works so well with the joke, I was just like,
"Yeah, that's just part of a joke." I'm sure I could probably get somebody pregnant if I tried. did I ever want kids? Yes and no. For the most part, no, because I never felt that I was ready. When me and my wife were together, we were never in a situation financially right. and stable wise to want to deal with kids.
Right.
Now that I'm older, I kind of like, it'd be kind of cool to have, you know, a little buddy to hang around with. But, right. you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I like being an uncle. That's fine. It's like, well, that really just shows me, like, my experience is just, like, I don't know. Like, I'm just not, like, patient enough. And I know, like, people, like, that aren't patient and they have kids. And it's just, like, it'd be really tough. Because I had... one of my first jobs that I had out of school was when I was working at Great Adventure, I took the second job where I did camp counseling, and it was like second and third graders. And I was like just the worst at disciplining and stuff. and it's just so tough. And nowadays, kids are so different with just their parents and everything. Like, I met kids who, like, weren't allowed to watch, like they weren't allowed to watch TV or anything at all. Like, it was crazy to me.
They want them to get out and play. They don't want to get sucked up in that digital thing.
Yeah, they're like, you know.
I can understand that.
And they have, like, such a, like, their diet and everything is so different. It's crazy. And it was just really.
The flip side of that is I've met some kids who are absolutely demons. And, you know, you can't really discipline them nowadays like you can when I was a kid. I mean, I hear kids talk to their mom in public. That if I had talked to my mom that way, my head would have been on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
You can't do that now because then you've got child services at your door.
No. Right. Yeah. That would always be like the, that would always annoy me too when I, that, because most kids were pretty cool to someone. They're just like, yeah, so that's really interesting. So, when do you think you're going to be, like, you probably, maybe you know this or not, do you know when you're going to be able to come back and do stand-up again?
I mean, with COVID, officially with COVID, I don't know. But as far as open mics, I actually scheduled an open mic to do this Thursday coming up at Cross Keys Brewing in Williamstown. That? I live further south than most of the people that go to Brighton Bar, so I can hit shows out towards Atlantic City, right. Philadelphia. You know, there's not a whole lot out this way, but you know, I do what I can. I may be looking into the opening my own open mic when COVID's done too. I've talked to a couple people about it, so we'll see how that goes. I don't know for sure, but I'm gonna try. I've been thinking about coming out to the Brighton Bar. The problem with the Brighton Bar for me, besides distance, is remembering that Saturday is the day for sign up and getting signing up.
Oh, yeah. It's just the
If I go to sign up and I'm like way at the bottom of the list, I'm like, man, I don't want to go up last. I really don't. Right. So I tried it. I was like, yeah, I'm going to skip it this week.
Well, the good thing is, like, what I've learned with it is, you can request, like, a time to go up, but that can just be really hard because it's just, like, to me, I always, like, never know if I want to do that or not because I always want to go up fourth. Like, that's my sort of, I don't know if you can relate to this. That's, like, the best time to me.
The middle of the act is usually the sweet spot.
You just get the best. He's, like, for me, do you know Tim Lowe?
Yeah.
Have you met him? When I was like, I don't know, like 3 months into doing comedy, I had to follow him at an open mic. He went first, I went second, and it was just like, he just had this like amazing set, and it was just like, I could not follow it. So now I just have like sort of a strict thing of like, I don't like to go first. And sometimes like, I'm getting a little bit better at that, but do you have that?
I would prefer to go somewhere in the middle of the set. Of a list of comics. It also depends on the type of show that you're doing. If it's a regular open mic or a showcase, it's somewhere in the middle, anywhere from like fourth on. If there's 10 comics, I'd say fourth through seven. Four through seven is like the best spot for me. Right. The opening acts will warm the group up, the audience. And then when you get towards the end, they're starting to check out. They're like, okay, it's time for me to go home. I'm ready to go. I'm not really into this as much. Now if it's
– right. There's always that, like, dip. Like, you got to, like – and that's the hard thing about, I think, with a mic like the Brighton Bar is it's such, like, a – some nights – the one thing now that's good with it starts with it – with the COVID, like, time, like, the ending that we have to end at 10 is been – like a godsend. It's been super good because it just like cuts the timing really well. So now we have a lot of people that don't show up that like just didn't do well. And we've always had that, like, and that's the one thing, just be patient too with people, because, you know, you can't always, like, you know, not everyone's going to be great, and we all have our nights where things are, you know, great. I think it's, you know, if you care about it, then, you know, it's fine.
Right, right on.
Do you have any, like, I know, like, things are kind of, you know, out there with, well, I guess you have you said that you wanted to start your own open mic and stuff. Do you have any, this might be a weird question, but do you have any type of, like, setting or, like, sort of, like, what was the place that you wanted to do it? Was it, like,
it's a bar or restaurant, I've inquired. They do, when there's no COVID going on, they do bands and stuff. So I talked to them about maybe doing an off night for comedy, and the manager seemed open to it, but she said not until COVID's over.
Right.
I'm honestly not thinking it's going to be over for a while. Probably not until at least 2022.
Yeah.
A lot of people are hoping for this summer, but even with vaccines, the vaccines aren't going to get to us that quick.
Right. Yeah. You haven't gotten
COVID. I had COVID, actually.
From it?
Yeah, I got diagnosed on November the 7th. It wasn't that bad for me. It was like a cold, some cough. Right. The worst was, I think, not being able to taste anything, really. And it went away after about a week and a half.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy how this sort of happened. Like, I always feel so bad now for people who want to get into stand-up. Like, I get asked all the time, people are like, want to get into it now, and it's like, I feel so bad for them. It's like, oh, this is
A rough time to get into it, but it's not bad for them to start learning the joke structure and stuff like that. Sit down, read a book, watch a video, watch comics, you know, just try to get whatever knowledge you can without being on stage. That way, when you do get the stage, you're going to hit the show, you're going to hit the floor running.
Right. Have you, do you take part in any, like, online writing classes or anything?
No. I tried to organize my own Facebook group to get people to basically crowdsource to, like, we'd post a joke and other people would comment and say, this works better, that works better. And I got very, very little response out of it. Before COVID hit officially in Central Florida, I was doing a once a month comedy writing group where we would get together at a restaurant and we would, you know, each person would take 10 minutes and pitch a joke idea, and the rest of us would crowdsource and give them ideas to help write the joke.
Right.
But other than that, no.
I'm in a couple of those, and, like, to me, I never really participated as much as I should, because to me, my sense, I always hate, like, with me personally, is, like, I have really bad insomnia, so the only times I really write jokes is, like, I'll write a block, like, 90% of the time, and then, like, it'll be 3 a.m., and I'll find, like, a thing, and I'll be like, Eureka, I have this joke to do. And then I just hammer away at it, and I think that's, like, one of the cool things is just, like, what you mentioned, like, working on a joke and seeing the evolution of it is, like, really the coolest thing. And realizing, like, you know, it's always just, like, extending your time and seeing, like, what you can do from your act and seeing how it's evolved. It's always really fun.
Probably the best online writing group that I've come across is the Hot Breath Network. And then they do the 10-minute, I forget what it's called, like, a joke of the day thing, whatever. You just get a random subject. You get 10 minutes to write on it, and it's like a contest.
Joel is one of the nicest dudes.
Yeah, I've talked to him a couple times. But he's gotten so busy over the last year that it's hard to get a hold of him now.
Yeah. He's one guy that's like, a bigger name that I want to have on my podcast, because like that'll just be, you know, great. But I'm just trying to get like to make it better, to make it more enticing for people. That's the biggest thing. Is that's the hard thing with it, is making it listenable for everyone right. to do.
Yeah, I talked to him about doing the podcast I was doing it in Orlando, and he was up for it. Problem is, you know, he would either have to come down to us or we'd have to go to him to do it. He's in Atlanta. So I told him, I said, you ever come down to do a show? No. I'll keep an eye out and I'll hit you up. We'll get you on. He's like, no problem. I did.
Oh, wow. You had a podcast?
I was doing a podcast called You Laughing at Me. It was a comedy, you know, stand-up comedy podcast. The premise was we were doing a podcast right outside on the patio at the Orlando Improv during open mic night. And what we would do is, or I would do is, I'd go in, I'd grab somebody as they're coming off the stage and say, hey, you want to do a podcast? Most people were pretty open to it. They'd come down, and as soon as they got off the stage, and we're basically, you're tapping into your feelings. How did the podcast, or how did your set go?
Right.
Did you get any laughs? Anything you could have done to change? How are you feeling right now? How'd you get into it? It's about a 10-minute interview. Some people, you know, we interviewed longer. When COVID hit, we put that on the burner. Of course, I moved away. I believe my co-host is going to keep it going with another comic, but I don't know what he's done with that. But we still get people sign up and subscribe to the podcast and listen to the shows that we have. We have about 5 or 6 shows that we did.
Oh, that's great.
You Laughing at Me? Yeah, you can find it on Podbean.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, for me, it's always, that's been the biggest, the coolest thing about doing the podcast. Thank you so much for doing it. It's just, you know, my main goal with it was just like when I started, it was just something that I did very lazy. I didn't pay much attention to, like, the audio was freaking terrible. And it was just more of, like, just me finding stuff to rant and talk about. And now, like, when I got my mic and everything, I've met so many. I'm coming up on 6 years, and I've met so many amazing people. And I figure, you know, as much time as I spend, like, you know, we're talking about, you know, working on, like, creating your comedy career, sort of what you learned in that class, I think a good thing to do is to also uplift other people is a good thing to do.
I mean, being supportive of other comics is probably the best thing you can do as a comic. There's so many, especially new comics, that are shitty towards other comics. And going back to the classes I was talking about earlier, Devin taught me one thing that I think was like a gold nugget of, you know, being a newer comic. Be nice to other comics. Like, say, I'd be nice to you, Richard, and let's just say something happens and you blow up and you become a big comedy star. You're going, you know, traveling around the world, and you say yourself, man, I need somebody to open for me. Who do I know that it's a good opener? You know what? Aaron was always nice to me. Hit me up. You know, it's an investment. You're not just being nice to somebody. You're investing into your future. You know, if I get on a show and they say to me, hey, do you know anybody? I'm like, you know what? I know Richard Dweck. You know, he's a funny dude. He's a real good guy. You know, I would recommend him. It's, you know, same thing. It's working for you. So.
Yeah. I think people always underestimate that too. Because you never know when you get in the comedy, like what people's...
It really irks me to see another newer comic talk shit about another comic, especially on stage. That's probably the last open mic I did.
Oh, yeah.
This one kid went up, and he was the last person to go up, and he was complaining about how he got bumped for the guy before him. And the guy before him, I mean, granted, he wasn't the best comic, but he was... He didn't go up there and talk shit about him. This kid went up there and just talked so bad about that person. And I was like, I was like, so, I don't know. It bothered me so bad. And I went up to the guy that right. Went up before him and said, look, man, I don't care how bad somebody does. You don't talk shit about another comic like that on stage. If you want to talk shit to them, do it off stage. Take it private.
Right. Yeah. I've only been bumped a couple times. One time was Blue Comic. I didn't get along with that host of the show. And that was like a bad, that was just a bad situation. But to me, like the only other time that I've been bumped was probably like when I was at Distress Factory. And like, I was at the open mic there and Bonnie McFarlane came. And it happened to me twice. It happened with her and her husband, Rich Voss. Like, they go up and they just do like, 20 minutes. And, we all get like, 5 or 7 minutes or whatever. And yeah. It's just like, you can't get mad, but it is annoying.
That's like, just part of the business, unfortunately.
Yeah. But, have you been able to meet any, like, professional comedians that they've been nice to you? Like,
Yeah, John Reap. I don't know if you know who John Reap is. He won Last Comic Standing. He was performing at the Orlando Improv.
Right, yeah.
So on Wednesday nights when they do the open mic, they also have a main show on the big stage inside. And we were doing the open mic, and I was going to head towards the bathroom. And John Reap standing there in the middle of, open area next to the bar, just watching the open micers. I'm like, hey, you're John Reap, right? He's like, yeah, man. I was like, yeah, I appreciate your comedy. I think you're funny. I was glad that you won Last Comic Standing. He was like, cool, man. I really appreciate that, And he seemed like just a genuine nice guy. And, he was just real nice to me. I just went on about my business. I didn't bug him too much.
That's the one thing that's been like so cool to me is most comedians, like professional comedians that I've met have been just like you said, like so nice. Like, and they just keep that, like even when they don't have anything really to gain from it. They're just, to me that's an important thing too is, not just being a newer person, but also it's really important when when you see an older person in stand-up not be nice to people, that can be even more disheartening because it's just like,
right.
You shouldn't look down at people.
That's the whole thing of punching down, man. You don't punch down on somebody when you're doing jokes. Why would you talk bad about somebody when you're not doing jokes?
Right. And plus, you always meet new people for shows and stuff, so it's not really cost-effective to have that. But, this has been really good. Thank you so much for.
No problem. I was actually kind of surprised that you asked me. I was like, wow, I really appreciate you putting me on your show. I don't think I'm anybody special. I'm just another open micer, but.
Right, but my thing is I just want to have people that I find that are interesting and have a good. I think who have also what I've just learned in doing this interview with you is. You have a good head on your shoulders. Like, you have a good, it's not only just finding good people to do, that are really doing stand-up.
Yeah, I don't try to associate people that are toxic, especially if they're comics.
Right. And yeah, I really love your stuff. It's very well regarded. I love the one joke that you do. It's like a small one, but when you're talking the dating apps and like Chicken Tinder and stuff like that, it's like, it's so like, it feels so classic to me. Like, and, do you know the comedian, John Panette? Yeah. It's just like, it kind of reminds me of that type of humor. Just like very, like, I just thought it was really good. And I was just like listening to your stuff and, also, just it's nice to get behind the scenes on everyone. That's sort of also what I've gotten with feedback with this is just like, you get to learn about everyone because even though we pretty much know each other, you can't really learn that much about people.
Right. I mean, you're diving deep. You're getting into their psyche. You're talking about their history, what makes them tick, how they get into comedy, all that kind of stuff.
Right. So, do you have any? You have social media stuff that you're on, right? You're on Instagram and everything.
Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Aaron Duvall Comedian. If you want to do my personal Facebook, it's Aaron Duvall. The only thing I recommend to people is just keep in mind that it's my personal Facebook. I do post other stuff besides comedy. I might do a rant or something that people don't want to see. So just keep that in mind. I'm also getting into, I don't know how far I'm going to get into it, but I'm dipping into game streaming right now. Tempest73, T-E-M-P-I-S-7-3 on Twitch if people want to subscribe and watch me play games on certain nights. I've been playing a lot of Dead by Daylight. It's like a favorite game right now. Right, yeah, great. Man, I appreciate you asking me to come on, man. I really do. And if you ever need any help with writing a joke or anything, you want to get some ideas, feel free to hit me up, bounce some ideas off my head. I'll tell you what it is.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right, man. Appreciate it.